Hey, welcome to the program. How are you today? Good to be with you. Let's start the show. You start the show. Go on, you start it. What? You want me to start the show? You start the show. I'm sick of starting the show. You start the show for a change. Why is it me that always has to start the show? Is that fair?
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
You start the show.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good hey, it's a Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? Good, fine, thanks. A lot of stuff going on. We can talk about it today if you would like, or we could go dancing. Let's talk about it. I don't like to dance. I've talked about that before. I'm 6'3" tall. If I stand up straight, that ain't gonna happen. Otherwise, I'm like 6'2.5". I'm 6'3". I'm intimidating. I'm not small. When people see me walking down the street, they not only walk on the other side of the street, they run for the hills. I'm intimidating. My friend, David Casella, who's an attorney, we used to go like walking around here and there, and he was 6'4", or 6'5", probably even, and he was also a large man, not fat, just large. And we'd walk down the street, and we'd literally see people fleeing for their lives. Oh my God, I don't know what's coming at us. Let's get out of here. It was horrible. Anyway, hi, how you doing? Hi, how you doing? Hi, how you doing? A lot going on today. I'm going to the beach today. And I hate the beach. I hate the beach. Sounded like I said, I hate the bitch, but I didn't say that. I hate the beach. It's got sand. It's very, very hot. It's got solar flares coming from the sun. It's, I perspire. It's very uncomfortable. I don't like it, but I'm going because I'm a human being and I'm supposed to enjoy this. So I go. What the hell? The news, if you're following it, Senator John McCain from Arizona, he's had skin concerns, as I do and many people do. When you reach a certain age, all of a sudden your skin starts saying, hey, we're going to do some funky stuff now. And you start getting these weird things on your skin and all parts of your body. And go, what is that? What is that? What is this thing? What is that? Why is that like that? And then you start seeing a dermatologist. And they tell you, oh, it's nothing. Oh, it's nothing. Oh, it's nothing. And one day they may say, oh, that's something. We're going to have to remove that. It happens at all ages, especially when you get older. John McCain had a little something over his eye there, a blood clot. They went in there to remove it. They did some testing on him. Well, before they went in to remove it, they did some testing on him. And they found that there's a little tumor in there, buddy. a little cancerous tumor in there, buddy. And we're going to have to remove that. And the Mayo Clinic announced that John McCain has an aggressive skin melanoma kind of thing going on. He's had trouble with that in the past. But it's aggressive, which means it spreads quickly. If you do nothing about it, you got about 2 years. That's your time clock. If you treat it, could go away, could be 5 years, whatever. He's 80 years old, you know, but you know, whatever. Anyway, and John McCain said this, and I'm not going to quote unquote, but basically this is what he said about this. He said when he has very fair skin, and when he was young, apparently he had a lot of exposure to the sun by sitting on the beach, not wearing sunscreen the whole bit. And this is a result of that. And I remember my dermatologist, I have one, saying the same thing. Saying to me, Ron, when you were a little child, were you out in the sun a lot? And I said, I kind of don't remember. I don't even remember what I had for dinner last night, but yeah, I guess. There was sun outside, and I was little, and I played outside. Yeah. Sun exposure when you're a little child, when you're 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, can chart what's going to happen when you turn 50, 60, 70. That's what happened to John McCain. I've had a couple of little things removed that were nothing, but the dermatologist told me that that's from your exposure to the sun when you were a child. And my response was, how can you blame me for this? Why are you blaming me for something that I had no control over? I don't make choices like that. Nobody told me when I was 5 years old, put a hat on, because when you're an elderly man, you're going to pay for this. No one said that to me, ever. Not even a clue. As a matter of fact, they said, go play outside. It's a good thing. Let the sun absorb the sun and the energy of the sun, leaving out the rest of the sentence, and someday this shall kill you. It's true. So I'm talking about this so that you young parents can hear this. Protect your child from the sun. Important stuff. Very important. It's bad. Sunscreen. Not too much sun exposure. It's your responsibility. Your child doesn't know this stuff. It's your responsibility as a parent, now that we know this for sure. I see these infants, these young children, 1, 2 years old, running around on the beach without any sunscreen or a little bit of sunscreen or something, and they're white Caucasian kids. And I'm saying to myself, wow, you're like a rotisserie chicken of death here. You better be careful, because you will be paying for this. And the more Caucasian you are, the more you have to be careful. Now, I'm a very, very Caucasian-y. I'm white. I even have some freckles. That causes problems. That means your skin is like crazy. I can't go to the beach now. Knowing this, I won't go to the beach. I'm going, but I'm going to sit there covered up like some type of a Hindu nun. I don't know what that meant, by the way. I don't know what that meant. Anyway, parents, bathe your kid in sunscreen if they're going to go outside at all. I know it sounds odd, like you've got to shield yourself from life itself. Kind of, yeah, you do. It's unfortunate, but it's true. All right, I'm going to move on. Today, depending on what time you're listening to this show, O.J. Simpson is going to stand before a parole board to see if they can release him from prison. I'm sure most of you know this story. I was introduced to this way back in the 1990s. I was doing a morning talk show. I was on for 3 to 4 hours a day. At times it was 4 hours a day. During other years, it was 3 hours a day. That's a long time in the morning. So we had to talk about everything. And we had guests on, and one of my guests was Mark Furman. This was after the O.J. trial. But we did cover the O.J. trial with that attorney that I referred to before, Attorney David Casella. We used to talk about the O.J. trial on a daily basis. And we had many of the O.J. analysts available. And after the trial, we had many of the participants available, including Mark Furman. So I was deep into this trial, news coverage-wise, as a part of my job. And that's where I started to hate the legal system, because I knew very well that had O.J. not lawyered himself up with the finest attorneys available, and had he not had the finances and the millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to pay his attorneys, he would have definitely been in jail for first-degree murder. For sure. I don't think anybody argues that point. And that's where the legal system infuriated me. If you're rich, you're good. If you're poor, you're screwed. Donald Trump is a perfect example of that. Donald Trump has been sued multiple times. When I say multiple, I'm not talking about three. I'm talking about more than 12, more than 20. He's been sued by various factions around him. And in all cases, he was never indicted. He settled out of court. He settled. Said, all right, let's just make this case go away. Here's $5 million. You can't talk about it anymore. You can't bring it up. It's done. It's settled. It never existed. The other party agrees to it. Oh boy, $5 million. That's our legal system, ladies and gentlemen. You can buy your way out of trouble. That's our legal system. Is it the best that we can do at this point? Probably. Is it the best in the world? Probably. But that doesn't make it good. It still makes it awful. It still makes it incredibly unfair. The very system that touts justice for all leaves out people without money who can't afford to lawyer up or to pay off or to settle. Now you know my opinion of the justice system. Anyway, we were deep into the O.J. Simpson trial. He gets off. He acts cocky about it. He goes into a hotel in Vegas there with a bunch of his friends in order to retrieve paraphernalia, memorabilia that he claims is his. He gets into a hotel room with his henchmen, his three or four other guys. A couple of them are brandishing weapons, guns. O.J. Enters the room with these people and intimidates the people in the room in order to get his stuff back. There's an arrest made. All of them are arrested. The guys that were carrying the guns, nothing much happened to them at all. The guy who commandeered the raid into the hotel room, that was O.J. He gets jail time in a penitentiary for a long time. Was that fair? Had it not been O.J., would that stiff sentence have gone down? Probably not. It was the justice system's way of saying, oh yeah, you're going to dick with our system? I'll dick with you now. And they threw him in jail. O.J.'s up for parole. Chances are, he will walk free. Not today. If they do give him the green light to get out of jail with your get out of jail green light card, it won't be until October 1st that he actually leaves the facility and becomes a quote-unquote free man. O.J. Simpson will never be a free man, ever. He's 70 years old, I understand. He will never be free. Everywhere he goes, he will be followed. Everything he does, it shall be reported, it shall be analyzed. He will never be a free man. Very similar to this Donald Trump guy. Once he's not president, either because he's not reelected or because he's been impeached or removed from office, for whatever reason, it shall happen. This man will never be free. He will be hated for the rest of his life by approximately 66% of the American population, which is, by the way, huge. It's not just huge. It's 2/3 of the country hates your freaking guts. That's a burden that most people would go crazy with. Trump, he just hugs his 33% and leaves it at that, and he's perfectly comfortable with that. Okay, fine, good. Whatever. So OJ probably will walk free. For some reason, they're covering this on the television networks. I don't know what there is to cover. I guess we'll find out. I guess you'll just see what he looks like standing in a courtroom is about all that's going to happen here. I think the parole officers will be witnesses, and they'll say, yeah, he's been good. You know, he hasn't shot anybody in jail, and he makes his bed in the morning, and yeah, he hasn't caused any real trouble, and I guess it's on a point system. You know, if you have low points, then you can get parole. It's kind of like auto insurance. So I've heard it's been reported he has low points. And he probably will walk again, not physically today. That wouldn't be until October 1st. And I'm saying to myself, what does this mean to me? Why is this being televised? Because it was an obsession of the countries back in the 1990s, and really ever since, whenever his name came up. He is the model poster child for murdering somebody and getting away with it. I don't know if that's a reputation one would want to really have for the rest of their lives, but that's the one that he shall carry and does carry. When he gets out of jail, he still owes the Goldman family. Actually, it was a double murder. His ex-wife, whatever she was, Nicole Simpson, and his wife, and Ron Goldman, who was a friend of his wife, not a lover, but a friend, he was murdered as well. Good times for that entire deal. Yeah, man, he owes that family a lot of money, millions and millions and millions of dollars. OJ's net worth right now, $250,000. I don't even think he could find a house for that kind of money. So he's screwed anyway. He's going to be screwed the rest of his life. But I'm thinking, like, how does this affect me other than the fact that I learned to realize that the judicial system was incredibly unfair? How does this affect my life? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I better change the locks on my doors now that he's free. Oh my God. I don't know. I don't think this affects me really one way or the other. We're just feeding our national obsession into getting into other people's business and our thirst for wanting to see bad people get their stuff back in their face. That kind of already happened with OJ. He already got his retribution. The system got him back. He's been behind bars for nearly a decade. Yeah, he's gotten it. Tell you something, though, if I'm driving down the street someday and I see O.J. Simpson in a Walmart, I guess I'm going to react by saying something like, hey, O.J. And that's about it. That's probably where that's going to go. Can you imagine being named after a juice? I think his first name is Orenthal. What? Who does this to somebody? Who names their kid Orenthal? Would you do that? Orenthal? Seriously? Is this a joke of some sort?
Orenthal?
They call him the Juice. His name is Orenthal James Simpson. O-R-E-N-T-H-A-L. Orenthal. It's too bad his middle name wasn't his first. Then he would have been James Orenthal Simpson, which would have been kind of what an executive's name would be, sitting behind a desk in a skyscraper. But his first name is Orenthal. I guess you'd call him Oren or OJ, which is what ended up happening, the Juice. I don't know. I guess he was tagged from the beginning. The other theory is that because he played football, and back when he played football, the helmets were kind of not helmets. Football has evolved into a safety organization to some extent. But back when Orenthal was playing football, it was like being hit on the head with a hammer. The protection was nil. And I believe that a lot of the football players, as even today, if you get enough concussions, you're going to have some brain problems when you get older. I guess today's theme would be brain problems, I suppose. I don't think I have to warn OJ to stay out of the sun. That's not necessary. But anyway, that's what's happening today. And no matter how you slice it, when it's all said and done, has nothing to do with anything. But Trump is still an idiot.
Have you ever wondered how Ron Van Dam manages to sound so damn sexy podcast after podcast after podcast? It's simple. No pants. Ever. Pants are for suckers. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Pants-free podcasting at its finest.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
All right, today I have a dilemma. I am, again, 6'3" tall. I'm a skinny Caucasian. I'm not skinny, but I'm a tall Caucasian. I'm not fat either. I'm just, there's a lot of man there. I don't know if you realize this or not. I think you probably do. I'm going to the beach today, as I've mentioned before, which is not too far from me, by the way, so not to be there too long. But it poses a problem for me, and it has to do with the pants thing. I can't wear long pants at the beach. I have to expose my legs today. This could rock society in a negative way. My legs are actually quite luxurious, beautiful, slinky, and supple. But at the same time, I don't like wearing shorts. I don't like exposing my legs. I don't know why not. They're not that bad. I don't like people to see my legs. I feel awkward. I feel, how can I put it? I feel exposed. I feel undignified showing my legs. Now, for women, it's totally different. And I'm not being sexist. Women have nice legs. It's part of their, women are, you know, creatures of beauty. Men are not. That's why they gave women a shape. And they gave men no shape with a penis. Obviously, men are not supposed to look great. They may be handsome. They may have your nice little booty thing going. But men, for the most part, not crafted to be pretty things. The private part area, I don't know what the hell happened down there. I mean, feel like I'm walking around with an elephant between my legs. It's just kind of odd. And then you look at the body of a woman, that's crafted very, very well. It's like engineered and crafted perfectly with a lot of thought and a lot of design involved. A men, they just like, they just slapped stuff together and this is what you got. So I'm not really like happy exposing the bottom part of my body, even wearing trunks. And, you know, wearing a swimsuit for me is like walking around in your underpants. Let's face it, it's like baggy underpants. As a woman in a bikini is walking around with nothing other than her bra and her panties. I mean, that's basically what a bikini is. So let's face it, when you go to the beach, it's like, it's showtime, man. It's showtime. You're going to show them what you got and you can't do much about it. You can't wear any spandex, really. You can't wear those little waist-thinning belts. Everything's exposed. You are what you are at the beach, and that's probably why I don't like it, one of the reasons why I don't. When you show up at the beach, you show up at the beach. That's you. There's, and you can wear your muumuu and all that kind of stuff. You look odd wearing a muumuu at the beach, let's face it. Any covering you have at the beach, people are going to look at you and go, oh, we're hiding something, aren't we? We're hiding something, significantly hiding something, aren't we? This is what I'm up against today, and that's what I'm wearing today.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
Well, keeping with our brain thing going on, thing with John McCain and the sun and all that kind of brain stuff. When you get older, you also have to start being concerned about your memory. I think all of us at some point in our lives have said, where are my keys? I can't find my keys. Where did I put my keys? Where's that important paper that I needed? Where is that? Where did I put that? Did I throw that out? Where did I put that? Where's my cell phone? I can't find my cell phone. I can't call myself because my battery's dead. What did I do with my cell phone? Where did I put it? I can't remember. And then the person you're with always says, where was the last, where did you have it last? Well, if I knew that, I would know where it is. Where are my keys? Well, where'd you leave them? Oh, idiot, I don't know. That's the problem. Oh. I don't know the difference between that and starting to lose your memory. And it happens very subtly. I had to find out what's going on with that because everybody who has a brain is a candidate at some point in their lives of starting to forget and developing some type of brain disease of a sort when your mental capacity just starts to go. Things deteriorate rather quickly in the body sometimes. So I thought it's time to speak to an expert about something like this. And fortunately, with the research and the my research team of 5,000 people, I have a 5,000-person research team. They're all on the payroll. That's why the show is so expensive. I do interviews every day, and I have for like, man, 25 years now. I've spoken to a lot of experts, so we summoned one to answer this very, very important question. Because I don't know. I just don't know. Let's speak to our guest now. By the way, I'm not going to say anything, but his name is Jimi Hendrix. Seriously. Dr. James Hendrix joins us now. He's a PhD, Director of Global Science Initiatives, Alzheimer's Association. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Alzheimer's disease, again, for those that may not be familiar or need to be refreshed, what is that?
Alzheimer's disease is a chronic fatal disease that is a neurodegenerative disease. It affects his memory and thinking and other behaviors. And it is of the top 10 causes of death. It's the sixth cause of death in the United States. And it's the only one without a way to stop or cure the disease. So we really do need better research, and that's why I'm here in London at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference that's focused on research.
Now, why does Alzheimer's disease cause death if that would be a nervous disease or memory situation? How does that actually cause death itself?
So the brain starts to fail. Okay. Without our brain, we're not going to be able to function. And, it may manifest itself in other ways, but just like how HIV/AIDS, people used to say it wasn't causing death, that people died of pneumonia. If people can't fight off an infection, they died of AIDS. Okay. And it's the same with Alzheimer's disease. They might die of some other things, but the brain fails, so they die.
It is extremely common. As a matter of fact, it's probably in every single family in one form or another, or a friend or a relative. It's that common over the years. Is this a hereditary situation?
Well, we don't know for sure. There is a genetic component, and certainly if you have a parent who had Alzheimer's disease, you are at higher risk. Mm-hmm. But it's not the whole story. And there are rare forms of Alzheimer's disease that are genetically driven. So if you have a genetic mutation, you will get Alzheimer's disease. But the vast majority, 95% or more, are what we call the sporadic form, and that occurs at 65 years of age or older most commonly. And there's no clear cause. It's probably a combination of genetics and the way that we've lived our lives. So how we've treated our brains over the years.
Okay, now here's the million-dollar question. Everybody who's over 65 or over 55 starts to forget things and blames that on the onslaught of possible mental degeneration, when some people, if they think back, they'll realize they never really paid attention to anything and really never had a good memory about things and have lost their keys when they were 20 years old. So how do we know if it's the onslaught of a disease or whether it's just normal not paying attention and forgetting?
That is the million-dollar question. And as we age, we all experience some level of cognitive decline. That's normal aging.
Right.
But Alzheimer's disease is a much steeper decline. And, of course, the trick is to determine when that occurs and how that occurs at the earliest stage. And the researchers now tell us that Alzheimer's disease actually begins, or the changes in someone's brain, it actually begins 10 to 20 years before symptoms begin. So we do need to think about how we can prevent or at least slow that the disease, especially in that early stage, and put it off for as long as we can.
Is it true that mental exercises do make a difference?
So we're learning more about modifiable risk, and that's one of the areas. The research is a little mixed right now, but I think it's one of the areas that we want to explore with more research. And also things like diet and exercise and social engagement, all these things seem to have an impact. And they've been studied individually, but at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference, just today, the Alzheimer's Association announced a $20 million study over the next 2 years called the Pointer Study, to look at a combination of diet, exercise, social engagement, and cognitive exercise that might help slow the decline in older Americans and then maybe even stave off the onset of Alzheimer's disease.
Wow. Okay. Have there been medical advances in this field?
There have been many medical advances. I know that people only look at the development of new drugs, and
we've
been over 10 to 15 years since a brand new drug has been developed. But we have learned so much about the disease, and I've learned so much just this week here in London. But the things that I think where we're making huge advances is the understanding of how the disease progresses and the use of biomarkers. You know, biomarkers are simply a way that that researchers and doctors can determine biologically the course of a disease. So a biomarker could be something like blood pressure. You know, it's something that is objective, that can be measured by an instrument. Mm. We now have techniques that can image the brain and show us when Alzheimer's disease changes are starting to occur. We have techniques that can sample the cerebral spinal fluid that circulates in the brain and in the spine. You can take a sample of that and you can determine if someone's brain is changing. And this also helps not only to determine who might be getting Alzheimer's disease at an early stage, but also can help people who are developing drugs to make sure that the people that are in their studies are actually people with Alzheimer's disease and that they're responding effectively to the drug candidates that they're being given.
Yeah, but that's part of the problem because I mean, at what point would a doctor test me for that disease? It's not part of an annual checkup, and yet it's something that every living human being would be concerned about or is a possible candidate for, yet it's not checked on this annual basis, and by the time it would be reported, it might be an extreme case at that point.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I think it's best said that if you have a brain, you're at risk for Alzheimer's disease. So we have started for Medicare, under Medicare coverage, we just recently got a win in Washington where the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid will now reimburse for an annual check of your cognitive health. And that's something the Alzheimer's Association was able to drive through.
Good.
But those checkups are cognitive tests. Uh-huh. And what I'm talking about here, of course, that's important to do, and it's very important to do. People should definitely take advantage of that benefit. But we're also talking about the day when we'll have standard tests.
Yes.
And one of the tests that we really would like to see is amyloid PET imaging. And this is a way that we can see the amyloid plaques, one of the two hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease, in a living brain. Until recently, the only way we could detect these plaques was at autopsy, which is a little bit late for most people. But now we can image these in living brains. And again, here in London today, we are just announcing results of a study that shows that with 4,000 people that got a PET scan and they had an unclear diagnosis of their memory issues, that two-thirds of them had a change in their care plan. So they were either put on Alzheimer's drugs after they got their PET scan, or they were taken off Alzheimer's drugs because the PET scan showed that they actually didn't have amyloid plaques, and therefore, by definition, they did not have Alzheimer's disease. So we need better techniques to more accurately diagnose Alzheimer's. Yeah.
Where can we get more information?
On our website at alz.org, we have a wealth of information about research and care and support. We are there 24/7 for families or anybody that has questions. No question is too big or too small.
Okay.
So please contact us.
My favorite quote from you today is, autopsy is a little bit late for most people. I like that.
We gotta spice it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, well, it's good. Hey, thank you so much for your time today. Very interesting. Thank you, Dr. Hendricks.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for your interest.
Okay, bye-bye. Nice man. Nice man. He's a nice man. He's a nice man. Oh, he's a nice man. Hey, thanks for dropping by today. This was unexpected. Thanks for being in the neighborhood, man. The way they just show up unannounced. This is great. Let's do this again sometime. Next time, bring something with you, like a bottle of wine or a cracker or something. Can you do that? All right. Maybe tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.